This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Tommy from The Run Testers, and welcome back to The Run Testers podcast. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the spring marathons that we've all done. So myself, Nick, Kieran, and Mike have all run marathons over the past few weeks. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about the training that we did before those marathons, the actual marathon experience itself, and the kit that we all tested over the course of each of those races. This podcast is also a full video on the YouTube channel. So if you'd prefer to watch this as a video, maybe don't listen to this podcast. Right, let's dive in and do the podcast. All right, guys, how's it going?
Very good.
Good, brilliant, good.
end of a long marathon season for us all.
We all did marathons.
You all did marathons. I think that's this is the first time we've all done marathons at the same time, isn't it?
Five marathons in 7 days, I think, between us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, although I did do another marathon about a month and a half ago, so quite a lot for me.
We won't talk
about the times yet.
Yeah. Save that.
So we've all done marathons. We've all done videos about marathons, so Manchester, Boston, and London. But in this special episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking to each other about all of the marathons, the training we've done, the actual race days, and talking a bit about the kit that we tested out for each of the marathons. And also, thankfully, there's been loads more marathons, so I've got lots more marathon celebrity times.
Yeah, a lot of celebrities, yes, in London.
It was a massive year for celebrities, much more than we've had for the last few years. So I've got plenty to work on. I've probably got two or three pods worth of celebrities to go through.
Good.
Have you got Matt Hancock? That's the only one I'm interested
in. Celebrity is questionable with that, but I have got Matt Hancock on here. Yeah.
Let's not do Matt Hancock. Let's leave him in.
Well, we'll have him as a bonus one.
I definitely ran past one of those celebrities you probably got on your list. So.
I didn't spot any when I was out, actually.
I definitely spotted two.
I didn't see any, I don't think.
Together.
Okay, well, let's start off and let's talk about the training we did in the lead up. Kieran, you did the first marathon. You did Manchester, and we won't talk about the time just yet, but
we're going to hide the times. We've done about five videos.
Well, if anyone's listening to this or watching this and doesn't know our times, that would be an extra treat for them.
Oh, they look amazing.
Yeah. Keep watching for the reveal.
Yeah, the big reveal. So, Manchester, you did quite a bit of training for, didn't you, Kieran?
I did quite a lot. Actually, what I did was I was sort of testing the Cooper running app, and I used that to train mainly for a half marathon up to the Landmarks half, which was a week before. And then, so that was basically how I was doing my kind of faster stuff. I was doing the sessions that were on that app to see if it could get me into kind of, I guess, sort of faster pace. So I've got quite a good base of endurance. And then nearer the time, in order to get marathon ready, I went out and sort of did three marathons in my training build up, which is not really recommended or probably sensible, but I realized I hadn't done any of that kind of that proper sort of long mileage, so I got three of those in just before the race. And I did some of those kind of slow, but with some sort of marathon pace sections in them, testing shoes as well, which videos on the channel, and it seemed to sort of pay off. It kind of worked. It was a sort of bit of a ramshackle affair, really, but somehow by hook or by crook I pieced it together and it worked out.
So how did you find structured training for a marathon? Because it's been a long time. Have you ever done, you did it once, didn't you, where you followed a really strict plan?
I have done, I mean, the interesting thing, this will be the third, without revealing the actual time, because I wouldn't want to give it away to, but this will be the third time I've run a sub three. And I seem to have done them every 5 years sort of since I started running. So every 5 years I go and do it. But it's a very different, a lot of what I do before this was just sort of out, you know, running long and just from enjoyment. It's been the first time I've gone back and had to be on the watch and looking at paces and thinking about sessions. And it is a very different mentality. I found it took quite a long time to get my head back into that, because I just don't think you sort of run as free. Maybe you're sort of, it's a bit more concentration. It can feel a little bit more like you're doing work, I guess, is the difference. But actually, I enjoyed the process and, you know, tried to just take each run at a time, tried to sort of hit some target paces, tried not to get too downhearted when I've missed them often. But yeah, it is a very different process. And I guess, you know, getting a bit long in the tooth, I've reached a point where maybe now I sort of just run for adventure rather than for time. So it was a bit of getting back into that. It took a little bit of a mindset change.
Going to do it again?
Yeah, I think I will. I mean, it has given me a bit of a taste for running fast.
He wants Tom's time.
Although, yeah, maybe save it for the autumn now.
All right. So, Nick, you're always training anyway, but you did train particularly hard for this one, didn't you?
Yeah. Highest mileage ever. Loved it. I think I won the best training block I've done. I really enjoyed it, despite the fact it was a really windy and unpleasant winter here in London. I got probably added on average about 20 miles a week. I was doing kind of 115, 125K weeks. And it went really well. Like, everything was going swimmingly up until the Easter holidays, when things got a bit trickier with fitting stuff in around the kids and that. But for the most part, trained really well, very consistent. And yeah, enjoyed it. And that's it. I mean, I really love structured training. I always have. I've got a coach, sets the sessions. It's great fun, good variety. Just a couple of, probably early on we're going hard. So even as I was building up the mileage, there wasn't a lot of just pure easy running in each week. It was really, you know, up in the mileage, lots of progression runs. So everything was finishing at a decent pace. And then in the second half, it was kind of one or two key sessions, long run, and then a lot of easy running around it. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. And you know, I've always known, you know, everyone knows that adding more miles to your general running will make you a better runner, but you've got to do it in the right way. And I haven't done it before. And I was amazed actually at how much of a benefit. Like, in the middle of that, I was running like my fastest park runs ever and stuff like that, when without doing any kind of 5K specific work. So hoping for maybe down the line, when I get back into the marathon mindset towards the end of the year for Valencia, I'll probably hopefully look at upping the mileage even more and just seeing what the benefits bring. But I had a great training block, I have to say. It really couldn't have gone more smoothly. I think it's also the first training block I'd visited a physio fairly regularly, just almost for check-ins. I do think it's, you know, it actually is worth it. It really made quite a big difference just to have that kind of peace of mind and checking in on anything, and didn't really have any injury issues or anything like that. So just probably, you know, just getting to the point where you're spending a bit of money or getting a bit of support from coaches, physios, it does make a pretty massive difference.
All right. Yeah. And was it just the mileage that you, were there any changes to the actual sessions, or was it just the...
Similar sessions, but longer, harder, faster. Like, I remember doing a couple of sessions towards the end. I did, the hardest one probably was 10 times 1 mile down the track. I remember doing that very early in the morning because I had to get back, look after the kids. And also they were throwing grass onto the track. That was a different annoyance. But I remember doing that exact session before Berlin when I ran my previous PB, and the sessions were, and the paces for the miles were just a lot faster this time. And hitting that was like a big kind of, okay, you've come a long way since Berlin. Because last year I didn't really do anything too serious, because I had my second kid last year. It was quite a relaxed year. Didn't really go hard at any marathons. Like Kieran's talking about, that kind of structured training takes a lot out of you and you take some mental focus as well. I didn't want to do that last year with the kids. So back into it this year was great fun. But yeah, an interesting challenge.
Good. Mike, what about you?
Yeah, so I basically I used an app as well. So it's one called Run With Hal, which actually you introduced me to, Tom, and I was planning to use it last year. Couldn't really complete the plan that I had, so I decided to give it another go. And I am going to do a video on this, kind of digging a bit deeper into my experience of using Run With Hal. And unlike the first time I used it, I dropped down to kind of an intermediate plan. So it's slightly different from the advanced plan that I was following for the last marathon that I did. And just really seeing how it worked. And, you know, I didn't really talk too much about what I was targeting. I think really for me, I wanted to be realistic about what I thought I could do, and also not have any issues or aggravate anything. I think a bit like what Nick said, I think I paid a bit more time in terms of, like, you know, I went to the physio before I did a half marathon back in earlier in the year, and just focused a bit more on that and following this plan as best as I could, knowing that it would get me around a good time, and hopefully get me around kind of my target time that I had for London, which wasn't a PB time, but a time that, you know, I knew that I was capable of without having any issues in the race as well.
Yes, I remember you running past me, looking quite comfortable.
I remember seeing Tom and then Mike and wondering what the position is they'd finish on the other side of the road. I saw them and both looked very happy at that point, Tom, I have to say.
I kept in on Tom.
I was only happy because I had something to do, which was looking at you. Anything that distracted me from my legs.
How do you train for doing two marathons in 6 days?
I didn't train for doing two marathons. I trained for doing one marathon. Actually, my training this year on paper was pretty much the same as what I'd done previously for Berlin. But in reality, I don't think I was never that focused on the time for Boston. So I don't think I probably put as much effort into the pacing stuff as I did for Berlin. I was very focused on that and I didn't miss paces. Also didn't miss any runs. Whereas this time, this is the first time I've probably trained over winter for a marathon. And I did find it really hard to fit it in and do the right, right pacing and stuff like that in Brighton in the cold and the wet. So
windy, very windy Brighton.
It's very windy. It's very difficult to see what pace, to hit the paces that you should be hitting for the session because it's windy and you don't know if you're hitting the right pace. And yeah, I should have been all right. But when it came to the race, I had trained for it, but I just don't think I'd put as much effort in mentally and physically as I had done for Berlin. So not a bad training block, but we'll find out how I did in the next
bought session. A whole load of gear though, didn't you? So not come away empty-handed.
We'll talk about the gear I bought in Boston because I'm now bankrupt.
So Tom exclusively wears Boston related clothing at this point.
Yeah, I've got Boston pants on at the moment, so all right, well let's dive into the actual races then.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Right, so three different marathons that we all did over the same 1 week period. So let's start off with Kieran. You did Manchester Marathon. Is that the only time you've done Manchester? First time?
Yeah, first time up there. Yeah.
And I don't think Nick and Mike, you haven't done.
No, I'm very eager to hear about Manchester course. I've considered it before, I get the feeling it's not the world's flattest marathon as claimed.
Cool then, Kieran. What was Manchester Marathon like? Was it what you expected?
A lot of people have told me beforehand not that it wasn't going to be the world's flattest marathon. So I knew there was some lumpy bits coming. I didn't really bother to look at the sort of course profile too much. I was just going to run what was in front of me. I sort of like to not get my head too much into worrying about what might be coming. It's a really well-organized marathon. You know, there's a good volume of people. I think 32,000 runners did it. It goes off in waves. It's very easy. You start at the Lancashire Cricket Ground, Old Trafford, near Man United's ground, the other Old Trafford, which is across. But it's a very good setup. The backdrop was nice and easy. All of that kind of morning stuff that you do to get to the race, it's close into the city. It's all very convenient, very easy. There was less sort of stress than many other city marathons on that front. And then you kind of wander from the backdrop. It must be about like a kilometre up to the start line. It all went off in waves. And then it gets very narrow. I mean, one of the things, there's a few things that I love the support in Manchester. It's not quite London levels. There's many things to like about the race. There are a couple of things that I found a little tricky. I was running the whole thing on feel and not looking at my watches. But immediately in the beginning, it narrows quite a lot. And you find in order to sort of get round people, you're having to shift up and down through the gears to try and get in a position where you can at least be running, you know, to be near your kind of target intensity. And there's bollards and sometimes you're being swept through kind of what are the cycle lanes. So, you know, the cycle lanes now have those kind of fixed in tall poles, bollards. Sometimes we're sort of shepherded into that kind of stuff. And I think it took probably, I don't know, maybe about kind of 3 or 4 miles before that cleared and you actually got into free running and could get into a bit of a rhythm. So that was a bit tricky. It was quite windy on the day. It was a really weird mix of headwinds, but also at times it got really quite warm. So there was a bit of a mixed bag when it came to the weather. And then there's two things that I think really sort of jump out of the race course here. If you're thinking about going for a PB at 16 miles and at 20 miles, there are two hills and they don't go on for very long. They are quite steep, but mainly been flat before that along kind of dual carriageways and stuff. And then when you hit those, they are, you know, they basically ask a question at the time when you probably lead it least, you know. As I came around one corner, I was at an aid station. I went for the last bottle on the aid station to try and get the water to avoid the crowds. and the guy who was there didn't put his hand out, and I missed it. And I was dying at that point at first. And then I turned the corner, and then there was the one big Altrincham climb, and it nearly made me sort of step off the course and go home. But you just got to kind of dig in and focus. Yeah, so it's not flat. I think it's challenging at places if you want to have that freedom to run all out from the gun. And if you're further back, that will affect how much of a PB course it is. There are big out and back stretches. Annoyingly, we didn't really get the wind at our back on the way back round through. But overall, I think it's well organized, good water stations. And once you get free, there's lots of room to move. And I think this year it's going to come on the same weekend as London. So I think people may be weighing up whether or not to go for Manchester or for London. As an event, I think it's a really good race to run. I really enjoyed it. And I think if you've not done it and you're looking for something different, then you can go and run fast on there. I'm not going to tell you how fast I ran, though, Tom, because we're saving
it. We're not saying it at all.
You can do it now.
Next week.
Well, we've all seen the photos of you running the course, Kieran, so it was quite clear that you were trying quite hard at certain points. What time did you get?
So I ended up doing a 2:54.40, which is like a 3-minute PB, and I ran the entire thing on feel, so not looking at watches at all, and I just... But at times I definitely found I was kind of struggling a little more than I wanted to. Maybe sort of 10 miles in, I had a period where it was difficult. And then for the last 6 miles, I was hanging on for dear life, to be honest. So there's lots of photos of grimacing and gurning and all sorts. Then with 800 meters to go, I got a bit cocky and I thought, I'm done. I pushed for 200 meters, then I was nearly sick, and I nearly became that sideways wobbly runner that falls over. So then the last bit I'm sort of shuffling over the line, but happy with the time, and actually the pacing was fairly even. I didn't manage negative splits this time running on field, but it wasn't too far off, and I think I left it all out there, so I'm really happy.
Oh, congratulations. Well, let's save London for last, because three of us did it. I'll bang on about my failure in Boston first.
What's the opposite of a negative split, Tom?
If you look at my pacing chart, it's just a straight down. It's like a diagonal line, basically.
It's an incredible first 10K, I have to say. I just assume it is downhill to start, right? You weren't just going nuts.
It is downhill to start, but I did feel pretty good anyway. So I think Boston, obviously, it's one of the most sought after marathons in the world. It's you've got to qualify to get in. So that's, I think a lot of people do it, and they put a lot of effort into getting in. And then when they get to it, they sort of enjoy it a little bit more. I spoke to quite a few people who said, oh, I'm not going for a fast time. I'm just going to enjoy it now I've got in. So Boston, I know, Kieran, you're the only one who's done Boston here.
Yeah.
It's quite a tricky marathon to sort of plan around, because you've got to get that bus out all the way. It's like 45-minute bus to get to the start line. So it's all a bit unexpected. Like, you sort of don't know where you're going if you've never been there before. And the start area, I wasn't a big fan of, because you sort of get off this bus and then it's just loads of runners just in a area with some tents and some water, and you're there for like 2 hours, which I'm not a big fan of, because you haven't got anything to do. There's not even any food or anything there. But it was starting to get really hot at the start of the race. I think it got up to about 22 degrees or something like that, but there was absolutely no clouds. So it was pretty much, beaten down on the whole time. But the first 10K is almost all sort of downhill.
Right.
And you really notice it. You get very excited at the start. It's way, way more noticeable than London. Mm. And you really just pick up the pace quite heavily on that. But I did feel fine. I was actually holding back a little bit on that. I wasn't like bombing it as fast as I could. But I got to 10K and I just felt awful. My head started hurting and stuff, and I just thought by about 15K, I just thought there's no point. I'm not gonna try and push this, because even if I had have pushed it with everything, I don't think I would have got a PB or anything. So it would have been a little bit of a horrible experience trying to force it to the end. But when you the Boston course is really undulating. It's like constant. There's probably like, they're not massive hills, but it's every at any point you can see a hill at some point in front of you. And it may only be a little one, but you really start to notice that over time. It really starts grating on you, especially in that heat. And Heartbreak Hill, I didn't actually notice until halfway. And somebody said to me, oh, you're on Heartbreak Hill. And I didn't realise, because I was in such a state by that point that it all felt like that. Anyway.
Heart's long broken, mate. Don't worry about it.
It is quite Heartbreak Hill. It's not like, I reckon on a good day, if you're feeling good and you maintain your pace, I think it would be okay. Even if you're having a bad day, I think you do notice it, because it's a bit, it's just long. It's not like really steep.
It's a horrible one to track, Boston. Like, we're looking at the tracker, tracking you, going like, "You're right." I said visions of you being horribly injured, but refusing to stop because you bought so much Boston stash, and you're like, "I've got to wear this." So me and Mike, and like, and then the split comes up, and you're going really slowly. Well, that must have been a hill because then the next split, you're not quite as slow. It's like, "Oh, what is going on? Is his calf hanging off?"
No, I was utterly wrecked by about halfway. I was just I just didn't have anything. I was walking bits towards the end, and so it was not a successful one. I still ended up with a. I think it was like 3.24 or something. So not a massively bad one for me. That's sort of still faster than a lot of my marathons a few years ago. But it's a really tough one. It's a really interesting marathon, though. It's because, you know, if you run Manchester or London or anything, you're basically running around the city. So it's like you run under the marathon, you're running in London. This isn't in Boston. It's like little towns and villages on the way into Boston. So all the crowds there are all these little towns. It's quite nice, like quite a nice community vibe to it. But it's definitely the only marathon I've run like it is Venice, which it starts 20 miles away from Venice. But yeah, it's a tough course, and I think a lot of people struggle to it. But
how was is it the Wellesley College Scream Zone or something? Was that good?
I didn't even notice it. I didn't notice anyone.
Okay, perfect.
The crowds aren't. It's not like London. The crowds aren't the same as London. They do line the streets, but they're not. It's not like dense with people. And you can sort of get off at points and sort of. There's no one there. You can walk along a little bit until you get into Boston. But you're not in Boston for that long, so But it's nice, and the finish is really some of the finish is nice. The actual finish line seems quite small in comparison to things like London. It's a little bit of an anticlimax, but enjoyed it. Won't be doing it again, I don't think. because I spent so much money on all of the Boston kit.
We spent about 3 days snowmobiling in Iceland beforehand, didn't you?
I did a bit of snowmobiling the week before the marathon, which I think is normal training. Good taper, yeah, classic.
Perez, what's her name, Chet Le Gat doing that. Yeah, they're all snowmobiling their way into London, all the ladies.
There were so many people there. All runners. That was my experience of Boston.
Nice.
So let's talk about London, but I think Mike, because this is his first time you've done London, isn't it? So it'd be nice your view of London from an inexperienced London runner.
Oh my god, it was terrible, wasn't it? It's not very good. No, do you know what? Having this talk about it now a few more days afterwards, I think has really kind of helped me kind of digest the race itself. And I think the difficult thing I thought I would find with London is that, you know, for fortunate, I've done a lot of races in London that take in a lot of the route. So it was more for me about, would that atmosphere really kind of drop, be, and it absolutely was. I mean, you don't know until you're in it and you're on that course just how good and how well supported. I mean, I've done, that's my third major now, and I can't say that I felt that kind of atmosphere. I mean, it's almost deafening at times on that course, but the fact is it is all the way round the route, and I've just not had that at a marathon. I think if you're looking at the majors and you're looking at one and you're wondering where you're going to get that best, great support. I mean, absolutely, that is absolutely what you get at London. And it was incredible. It was incredible to be part of it. As I said, the route was probably less something I was really kind of concerned about, more about kind of being part of that amount of people. Obviously, it was the biggest participants for London. And I think for me, that may be one of the things I found with the race was it did get a little bit congested. I don't know if you guys would have found or had the same experience in different parts of different waves and what have you, but I did find in place, and I think just naturally because of the way the course is and it narrows a little bit, at times it did feel a little bit busy, but it thankfully wasn't in too many places. But I do think that's maybe they may have to look at that. But generally, I was really happy with the race. I mean, I kind of didn't tell you guys what I was kind of targeting. I knew I probably wasn't going to be PBing in this course, but ultimately my target was to get through it and not have any issues like I have kind of at latter stages of marathons where I run good times, but I've had issues, and I was pretty happy. I kind of went out harder in the first half, knew I could probably go a little bit harder in the second half, but I played it a little bit more cautious, and I enjoyed it, and I just enjoyed the crowds, and I could still run nice and feel like I was running a good time. And I knew, very much early in the race that I was kind of in the right place to do the kind of time that I wanted to, maybe go a little bit quicker than kind of anticipated. Well, so yeah, whenever people talk about the crowds and there's the atmosphere, I absolutely get it. I totally get it. And I totally get why people talk about it. And while I don't necessarily absolutely love, just because I've done the route a few times in different races. I think it's a pretty flat one in general. There are a couple of little niggly hills that people won't absolutely love. But I think when you think about the locations it takes in, and if you've never been to London or run around London or run in the UK, I mean, it takes in so much of London and the good parts, and you get the good parts of people coming out and support, and they're coming from all over the country to come and support you. And it's definitely, as I said, talking about and thinking about a few days away from the actual race, it definitely made me appreciate it a lot more in terms of, you know, being part of it and being part of this one this year.
I tell you what, if I had an absolute horrible, not because of the event, but because of I was absolutely wrecked from Boston. I felt fine for the week, but obviously my legs weren't properly recovered. But my plan was to just run like a sub-4. But in my head, I was thinking, I'll just run a sub-4, take it easy, just relax, just jog around smiling. I was in so much pain just trying to get that sub-4 done. And when the crowds at London are incredible, if you you need support and maybe, you know, it's not a marathon, you've done a lot. When you're in at so much pain and you know you can't keep going, having 1,000 people shout at you, keep going, you can do this, it does not help you at all. But most marathons that I've done, there's always areas of respite. So you can sort of go, if you're struggling, just, you know, go and walk along the side of the road. There's no way you can go. You just have to walk in the people shouting faces as you're just hobbling along, or in the middle where there's just to get away from them. But either way, it's a tough one if you're struggling and you know that you can't actually do any better. How do you find it, Nick? Do you think I definitely did feel that it was very busy this time, but I know it's some waves, so I assume that wouldn't be have a massive impact on it. But
definitely busier at my end as well. I would say I was surprised. Running with a friend beforehand, like we arranged, I will run together, a guy who's also coached by my coach, and we were just in a big group. I barely really saw him that much. We were in the same group mostly, but I was expecting, it is, you know, it's very busy at the start of London at any kind of pace. I thought after 5K you'd get a little bit strung out, and it got a little bit strung out, but no, I was in big groups for ages, which was really nice, and then strung out a little bit second half. You kind of start, if you're feeling good, I was feeling good second half, you start to climb the ladder of runners, is how I think of it. You know, you see a runner, you slowly pick them off, you pick the next one off, kind of, that's how you get through second half of the race. But even then, I was running with people the whole way, and I think it was busier full stop. Like, it never felt congested really for me, but it definitely felt busier, I would say.
Okay. I should probably say here, because we've done the videos on these races now, and few people have commented who maybe are new to running or the marathon running, who've been asking how to get into these races. We've been bigging up London. Yes, London is really, really hard to get into. So
yes,
if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, I might give that a go, it's very, very hard to get. Some people never get into it through the ballot. There is a ballot that happens every year. I think it was almost 600,000 people entered for this year, and eventually they were.
And the ballot's random. If you keep entering, you don't get any better odds, so you're just as unlikely to get. I think they are increasing the amount of the field next year. They're going for a record next year, aren't they? That might be more of a chance, but your odds are still. Because I think they probably give 25,000 ballot places max, even including dropouts.
There's
500,000. I mean, some of those people applying in that numbers are the applying for the overseas ballot, which is different. But even so, your odds are low of getting in.
So sorry if you listen to this and you desperately want to do it, and it is very hard to get into. You have got the charity option as well, which means you have to raise money for charity, but I think it's quite a lot now. It's
$2,000,
$2,000. Or you can do Good for Ages, is how I got in, which is if you run a time for a marathon in the year previous that fits within the sort of rules of within the different age groups, you can get in through that route.
That's basically like Boston equivalents almost.
Just one other way you can actually, running clubs.
Yes.
Allocated tickets, and they have smaller ballots. So, it means joining a club, and the way they divvy them up might be different. But sometimes I know runners who are members of smaller clubs where not many people actually want to run London, and they often
I can tell you
win
about
the ballot or get in. But
those clubs, it's the club places are I think they have been smaller than they have been. My club gets a lot of places because we run one of the elite drinks tables. But I do think, and normally our club allocates them on who's been doing the most for the club, who's been marshalling races, turning up for races, turning out to do volunteering. And I think a lot of clubs do that as well. But I don't think there's actually, I was surprised actually that I think our club places were slightly less than in the past. But
same for my club there. It's a smaller number. It's definitely a smaller number. And I've seen a few kind of my club members kind of out, kind of helping out on the course and stuff. So yeah, I do think that is one of the other ways, but it's definitely, I think the pool of opportunities to do it through club running has definitely got a bit smaller.
Yeah, and on Boston, you have to qualify. That's the only way you can get into it, unless you do charity as well. Okay, well, that's almost all successful marathons all round, apart from me. let's dive into the kit that we tested during the marathons. Okay, guys, are you ready for some London Marathon celebrity times?
Here we go. It's a big one.
Your favourite time. And as I said, there's a lot of people, a lot of celebrities that did it this year. There was a massive long list. I mean, when I say celebrities, I didn't know about 80% of them. So I've basically picked ones that I know.
We're all older gentlemen now, so it's tricky.
Yeah. And celebrities these days is a little bit different. When you look at celebrities like 20 years ago, they tended to be TV personalities, sports personalities. Now it's social media personalities, and I haven't got a clue where any of those are. So I've stuck to the ones that we know. Right. So first one, Ramesh Ranganathan, who ran the marathon for Calm Charity. And according to his post, only found out he's doing it 10 weeks before. How do we think Ramesh did?
I should know this because I listened to the podcast and they've been talking about it for weeks. So. I think it's, I'm going to say five hours 30.
4:45.
4:30.
6:35, 21.
Oh my days.
I think he found it quite hard. I listened to the podcast as well. I've not listened to the one where they talk about it.
No, so I came out
yesterday. That is tough.
It's a long time to be out there, isn't it? But
he was going to wear tights, apparently. Not tights, but he was going to wear like proper, yeah, even though it was pretty warm, because he was worried about shitting himself. So
he was, yeah.
He didn't want to arrive and have Gabby Logan interviewing the celebrity. Yeah. I mean, so he thought that might cover it up if it happened.
Kieran, you can't criticize anyone for overdressing. Get away.
I know. I'm like, this is a perfect strategy. I'm like,
okay. What about Phil Dunster is? He's in Ted Lasso.
Speaking of podcasts, he popped up on the Ellis James John Robbins podcast talking about it, I think.
Oh, there you go then.
Yeah.
Ted Lasso?
He's the one in the first series who isn't very nice and falls out.
Not a keen character.
No, it's the younger guy. He's basically a young guy who looks quite fit.
3:45.
I think he was going for it. I think he was quick. I think he was going to run like a 3:17.
Mike?
3:47.
4:03:11. He was running it for Young Lives versus Cancer. Okay, how about, anyone know who Natalie Pinkham is?
I do. Her son actually goes to, he's actually best friends with my son.
You really do know that is. Sky Sports F1 presenter. I had no idea who she was because obviously I don't watch anything to do with sport.
I actually helped her a little bit with a few things ahead of this. So
this is a little bit unfair. Good job there's no prize for this.
But now I'm going to get found out because I can't remember the time is. I think it was five. I want to say 5.5. No, it was close to five. I'm going to say 5.
5:10.
5:15.
4:52:22.
Ooh.
And she was running for the Samaritans. Okay. How about, I don't know who this is, but hopefully you will, Gary Rowett.
Oh, the footballer?
No. Yeah. Football manager.
Yeah. Oh, he's only recently retired. So I'm going to say 3:40.
Retired from playing or managing? That's 4:05.
Okay. 4:15.
3:41. That was 36, which is
very
about
good.
Previously, he'd run Rome Marathon in 3:46:16. There you go. That's a good one there. Right, I don't know who any of these people are, so just skipping these. Ruth Wilson, who was the actor in Luther, but she's been in loads of stuff.
4:12, I'm going to say.
That's pretty good. I'm going to say 436.
I'll say 348.
Ooh, it was 454.26. And the big one, she was running for Alzheimer's Research UK. The big one for you, I think you, Nick, who since you keep bringing this up, Christopher Eccleston.
The Eccles man.
Yeah.
The doctor.
The Eccles cake.
Doctor Who, so got to be pretty fit. That's just part of the role, I think.
He's 60 as well.
Part of the role, though, is Doctor Who. Got to be pretty fit, Tom.
Okay, yeah, I don't know if that is true because...
Tom Baker's pretty fit. Everyone knows that.
Sylvester McCoy.
I reckon he probably... He danced his way around. 5 hours, 30.
He's 60?
Apparently.
It's surprising, actually. Do you remember his Doctor Who episodes were now, what, 20 years ago, 25 years ago?
Yeah, 25, yeah.
I'm going to go 450.
Yeah, I was going to go 455.
I think Nick's close. It's 521.50. He was running for The Big Issue. And finally, the one that you've all been waiting for, Matt Hancock.
Not doing Ivo Graham and pushing around Rosie Jones, who I did make sure I passed.
I haven't got them on the list. Well, go do Matt Hancock then. How do you think he did?
Got halfway and stopped crying, gave it up.
No, he didn't.
I think he would have done annoyingly well, didn't he?
430, I'm going to say. No, 350. I'm going to go.
Might be interesting to see the one part of the London Marathon people weren't cheering.
Just silence.
Just a wave of silence.
As you always guessed. It's at 355.37. And when, I think, which sounds like a PB. I can't remember, because he's done it before, hasn't he?
Sounds like a PB.
He's done it before,
Tom's
hasn't he?
Tabs and all this. I don't know. I don't follow Matt Hancock's marathons.
I'm sure he's cropped up in the quiz before. So, and then finally, I forgot one more. So, Jack Durgis. Friend of the show. So, shout out to Jack. How do you think Jack did?
I know Jack did.
Oh, you do know Jack did, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all right, we'll just do a congratulations then, since you already know.
317.
So, I don't think it's the time that he wanted, but it's a damn fine time.
Very good time, yeah. At 6 meters, Peace Guy Paris. Good choice.
There you go. Must be listening. Yeah. Well done, Jack. All right. That'll do.
Yeah.
Right, so Kieran for Manchester Marathon, what did you wear? What are you testing?
Do you want to know the whole outfit or just want the shoes?
we don't have power, really.
Just the shoes and anything really, really important that stands out, if there is anything.
So the shoes, I wore the Asics Metaspeed Sky Paris and they did everything that I needed them to do on the day. I mean, that's kind of the biggest compliment I can give them. They were absolutely bang on. I had a doubt with the shoes. If things go wrong and you end up kind of hanging out your ass at the end of the race, whether or not they're protective enough in the back, I wasn't quite hanging out, but I was, I was struggling a bit and they still did a good job even in those last 6 miles when I maybe wasn't moving quite as well or in as good form. But for 20, they were really nicely controlled. Lots of energy, lots of pop from them. Really good sort of overall sort of disappearing comfort as well. So sometimes I find with some of the carbon races after, 2.5 hours on feet or whatever, you can start to notice those kind of tight uppers or, those minimal heel collars and all those kind of things. They just don't quite feel comfortable. When you want to get to the end, first thing you want to do is take them off. And actually these shoes, none of that, even by the end of it, I wasn't in a hurry sort of walking around after to get them off. So the comfort on the foot, I think, was a real standout and a bit of a surprise because I thought they might not sort of hold out for that. I thought they could run fast. I wasn't really sure I'd be entirely comfortable for that long. But yeah, they were awesome. I mean, they did exactly what I needed them to do on the day and they've become one of my favourite shoes. A week later, I ran a 5K in them and did a 5K PB as well. So I've now done almost, lots of different sort of races and PB'd in them a couple of times. So yeah, I think they're closer to me like than they are closer for me to like a Nike Vaporfly 2 or something, which is that sort of bit more minimal, bit more direct, which I really like.
Any other top picks from the kit that you tested? You have to go into depth about it.
What else did I mean? I ran and tested a couple of watches, which we've got reviews coming up. I can't remember if we've actually put them out there yet. Grit X2 Pro versus the Vantage V3 I had on. I also had the Garmin 4 and a 965 and another watch as well.
Three watches to cover up. It's a lot of fabric here.
I had four watches. Yeah.
Four watches. Right. None of them you're looking at.
Yeah. None of them I was looking at. The other thing, I also wore the Sennheiser Momentum Sport heart rate tracking headphones again. And you just to see, and yeah, they flatlined, I think, at 145. After about 6 or 7 minutes, they just flatlined. So on Strava, that's gone up, and everyone was coming back to me and saying, look at how even your heart rate is, because every mile was 145. And that was the one. I've spent like 3 weeks explaining to people that is not true. But I wish it was. But yeah, so again, the heart rate on that didn't quite work. The audio did a good job in the wind.
All right, Mike, what did you go for?
Yeah, so shoes-wise, I had the New Balance SC Elite V4. Now, full disclosure, my place for London was through New Balance, but they didn't ask me to run in the shoes. I decided that's what I was going to use. And actually, I think going for something like the SC Elite V4 works for me in terms of how I wanted to run that race. Now, it's, as I said in kind of our video, it's probably not the shoe that I think has been my favorite in terms of those marathon kind of super shoes that we've tested. But I feel in terms of what I wanted to do in this race, I wanted something that was going to still feel fast, but ultimately feel that it was going to feel comfortable, feel stable. And that's ultimately what I got from the shoe. Some of the issues that I think we talked about in our review, kind of in terms of the kind of heel lockdown, things like those, things that maybe were concerned for me, didn't really, a lot of my marathon training was in this shoe, and those issues weren't replicated. Those earlier issues weren't really replicated in the marathon and the marathon training as well. And it just felt comfortable. The feeling of running in that shoe didn't change throughout that race. I had no issues. Even, when I started to maybe tire a little bit, I didn't feel like, and I kind of mentioned this, it was, if I went for a more aggressive shoe, I think maybe I might have encountered some more problems with the shoe and running and trying to maintain what I was trying to do. But in terms of running the time that I did, it felt like the ideal one. It still feels fast. It still feels like a fast shoe to run in. It's just a different type of these kind of racing shoes that we've tested this year. And yeah, I felt like the right pick. I mean, I definitely would have looked at some other shoes, but for me, in terms of what I wanted to do in that race, it really served me really well. And I was really happy in terms of, how it performed on the day.
Yeah, well, you look pretty content, and as you shouted at me when you ran past. So, yeah, that was quite late on in the race. Anything else that you want to mention?
Yeah, there was a load of stuff, but I did a couple of things I did want to kind of definitely mention. So I was through training, and probably like the beginning of the year, I've become a little bit of a convert to, and I'll blame Nick. Well, not really blame, I think I kind of thank Nick, is I used half tights for the first time. I've been racing in half tights. I've been storing kind of my stuff. I used the Precision Fuel Hydration kind of gel pouch, and I just used that. I didn't use any gels. I just used that for the race, and it was great. And in terms of having storage and not really having an issue in terms of kind of rummaging around in kind of a belt and stuff like that, it worked really well. And I used the kind of Janji half tights, which I found this, I've been playing around with those and the kind of Seiski ones, and I found this worked a bit better for me on the Janji ones. So those were very good, and that was kind of a good find for me in my training. The other thing I wanted to talk about, because it was London, because I wanted to soak up a bit of the crowd, hear the atmosphere, I used open ear headphones. So I used the Bose Ultra Open Earbuds, which I got sent just a few days before the marathon, and I was going to use something else. I was going to use the Suunto Sonic, but I chose to use these, and it proved to be a bit of a mistake because one of the earbuds didn't pair when I got on the start line. I'd already put my bag away, and then probably quarter of the way into the race, and I'd grabbed a bottle of water and I've knocked one of the buds out, and I lost about 2 minutes trying to find the earbud on the floor. And then thankfully one of the spectators spotted it, and I was basically listening through one ear, one of the earbuds basically, and ended up, it wasn't the best experience of those. But I had some other bits and pieces which I'm going to talk about in kind of future videos, but those are things that kind of really stood out for me, and in different ways, but well worth seeing how they performed kind of the marathon.
Well then, Nick, what did you use?
I used the MetaSpeed Sky Paris. I had a great build up with that shoe. Did some of the best training sessions of my life. Ran probably the best half marathon I've ever run in it in that shoe. And then, yeah, on the day it was perfect. It's just a really nice combo. It's very lightweight, but it is really bouncy. So cruising through the first kind of 30, 35K, felt very in control, hitting the paces I was looking at. And then at the end, when I was struggling, it's so lightweight. I'm a very high cadence runner. It helps, you know, turn the feet over to have a lightweight shoe on that. And I think big difference I noticed with the Metaspeed Sky Plus and some other shoes is even when I am running quite, you know, really quite shuffling towards the end and getting quite low impact and just not really having that you know, that loping style you need to kind of really engage the plate in some shoes, I find with the Metaspeed Sky Paris, just even that shuffling gait engages the plate. I felt I was still getting the kind of feel of propulsion from the shoe and was holding a pretty decent pace at the end, even as I was starting to struggle, ran a nice negative split. Yeah, I couldn't have thought, they're brilliant shoes. I do think they are the outstanding shoe on the market really all round at the moment. We haven't tried the Edge. People will ask about the Edge. We haven't tried the Edge. We're trying to try the Edge. and then I had a couple of watches. I've just actually filmed it. I'm going to edit that video soon. I did a big long term. I was trying to basically wear the Garmin Epix Pro and the Apple Watch Ultra 2 for the entirety of marathon training and the race itself, and then use them on the day. I had the Apple Watch's pacer mode set up. It was remarkably accurate on distance, the Apple Watch, actually. I think to the point where maybe it corrects it if you set a pacer. I don't know. And then the Garmin, I was basically taking manual splits every 2K and using that to not get carried away, running quite even splits and then picking it up towards the end. So I've got a big video on those two watches coming over, what I've noticed over the last 4 months, what's annoyed me, what hasn't annoyed me. But yeah, they're very, very, very good on the day, actually.
Well, I wish I'd used the Metaspeed Sky Paris by the sounds of it. I went for the Nike Alphafly 3 for Boston, but I like it, but it's just, I just don't think it works for me. It definitely wasn't the reason that I did badly at Boston, but I definitely don't feel like, it felt nice for the first 10K or so, but I just don't feel I'm getting enough bounce and propulsion that I get from the Alphafly 1. And I definitely didn't feel like it was helping a lot in the later stages. And I've felt that in a half marathon before. I do think it's a nice shoe. It's just not quite right for me. Sorry?
Did it make a difference on the hills?
No.
No.
Nothing could have made a difference on the hills. I could have been wearing rocket shoes and I think I still would have struggled on those hills. So I use the Alphafly 3s for Boston. I think I could see how it would work for, I know you're a big fan of it, Nick, I could see how it would work for you. For me, I just don't think it's quite right. But
you weren't far off your 10K PB in the first 10K, to be fair.
No, I mean, I think I can do this. I actually think the long distance is probably the one that is really, it's really noticeable one. I've raced in it before at short distance and found it absolutely fine and got close to my PB. But for London, I went a bit mad and I did I used the Saucony Triumph 22 because I thought, oh, I'm going to use a nice easy shoe because I'm going to do a nice easy run. And I really struggled in that shoe just because I'm not used to using a shoe like that for that sort of distance.
Hefty shoe as well.
It's quite hefty. And I think I would have been okay with maybe the Triumph 21. I think it is a little bit of a different ride to the 22. I know you guys haven't tested yet. You've got it. But
yeah, I've running it. Yeah, running it. Yeah. Short runs. It does feel quite different.
Yeah. I can't quite put my finger on it. And I said in the video that I did that I'm not going to review it based on that marathon because my legs are in tatters anyway. So it's going to be a pretty bad, a poor chance to do a review. So I'm going to do another run in it when I'm this week and then we'll do a video on it. But yeah, definitely it's strange to run a marathon in a shoe like that when you're not used to doing it because you get into later stages and you can really feel that there's a big shoe on your feet, basically. So, yeah, I didn't really test anything else out. I just didn't full sulk it, as usual. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, that should do us for the spring marathon season. Well done all on the times. And we're all getting some much-needed rest now.
Yeah, recovery week. Nice recovery week. Probably do some short stuff over the summer, autumn.
Not for me. I've got to go and get ready for doing big hills in the Comrades. I've got a 35-kilometer climb to prepare for in May. It's first week of June, I think. So I've got about 45 days or something. Is that right? I don't even know what the date is. I've basically got 40 days to get ready for 50 miles starting with a 35K hill. So I have to find hills. So no rest. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll cover that very, very soon. All right, then, guys. Catch you later.
See ya.
Hey.
This episode of the podcast was presented by Tom Wheatley, Kieran Alger, Mike Saw, and Nick Harris-Fry. It was produced by Tom Wheatley. The music was by Fear of Tigers.